Hello, and
Matt,
welcome back
Matt,
to
why,
the...
Sorry. Sorry. Matt, why are you so bad at clapping in time? I thought I'd get that in before Abby.
We just need to let Abby do the intro, mate. That's all we need to do. Just be quiet until you introduce the
cast. Unless you want to lead the podcast, Ian. Do you want to lead the podcast?
Not at all. Not even slightly, Abby.
Okay. Hello, my name is Abby Mickey, and you are listening to the Album Files podcast. A podcast about music, kind of loosely based on music. I'm joined by Ian Treloar.
Hello. I've been introduced now. Hi. It's me. I'm the problem. It's me.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. And Matt Deneve.
Hello. I'm also here and probably also a problem.
I think if you were going to list the three of us as who is the most problem, not problematic, that's completely different, but who is the most problem, it would be me and Ian just constantly going like this, like swapping spots. And then you, Matt, are like solid third no matter what the situation is.
I think that's a compliment, and I'm going to take it as such, so thank you.
It is a compliment.
Okay, great.
And Ian agrees with me, too.
You're a very good boy, Matt. Yeah, yeah, 100%. I'm happy that I'm not just clear-cut first.
No, I think you and I trade off, depending on the week.
I think if we could just start every podcast with just a quick bit of praise for me, that'd be great. Really set the tone nicely for me and my self-confidence as we start the episode. So thank you for that.
We can absolutely do that.
Let's keep that going.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like your hair today.
It is wet. It is hot here.
Yep.
You're actually one of the smartest people that I know.
Okay. You need to meet more people, I think. But thank you. I appreciate the kind
I'll
words.
I'll come up with better compliments next week, next episode. Well, we've got a listener pick episode today that is going to be fascinating to talk about. But before we get into that, I am just like really excited for the music that I've been listening to lately. I'm gonna wow you guys. Ready? The last like week, I have been just totally obsessed with a French pianist / composer named Sofiane Pamar. He's influenced a lot by like hip hop, but he does like classical music, and he has an album that I would love to pick for a future album because it's so good and it's so fun to listen to. But all of the songs are or all the tracks are named after cities, and each is like inspired by a city. It's really good. It's like really, really good. There are no lyrics, and I love it.
I thought for sure when you said you were going to wow us that you were being sarcastic and that you were going to talk about Taylor Swift or the new Lizzie McAlpine song, which I'm sure we'll come to in a second. But you didn't.
Did I actually?
You actually
wow
did
you?
Wow us. Yeah, it's cool. I'm excited to check out this person whose name I've already forgotten. Sounds really cool.
Sofiane Pamar. There's a T at the end because he's French, and the T is silent because French. But it's the album that I've been listening to just like nonstop is called Planet Gold. The person is just a very, very fascinating human being. I don't even know how I came across him. I feel like it was something having to do with the opening track of the Last Dinner Party's album, Prelude to Ecstasy. The opening track is like very classical music. And I feel like I was watching a review of it on Facebook, on YouTube. And I don't think I even have Facebook on YouTube. And somebody mentioned him in the, while they were talking about the Last Dinner Party. On top of that, I've been listening to Beyonce's new song, Texas Hold'em, like it is the only song in existence. Man, that's a good song.
It's pretty catchy.
It's so good. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited for the album. I'm more excited for this Beyonce album than I have been excited for any Beyonce album before ever. I feel like she is just like gloves off, fuck everybody. If she's made a country album, like I'm all for it.
I was going to ask whether the whole album is country or pseudo country or whatever it is, but it sounds like it is, right?
I think so, or at least most of it. I mean, yeah. The other song that she released that I can't remember the name of it, it wasn't as country-y, but she's been wearing a lot of cowboy hats lately. So I feel she's giving off that vibe.
It's a cool song, and I am also looking forward to hearing more.
But I assume that you, Matt, have been listening to the new Lizzie McAlpine song.
Oh, how could you not?
Really sad.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning, isn't it? Yeah, it is very sad. I think you mentioned in the group chat the other day that it had you in tears, and it's pretty, yeah, it's beautiful. It's quite simple, isn't it? It's just piano and vocal and bass, and I think I saw on Instagram, she was saying they recorded it in like just three goes or something, three takes, and it's like a half an hour effort after she brought the song into the studio. And yeah, it's just beautiful. Her voice is incredible, as we already know. And yeah, if we weren't already excited for the album that it's off, I think we certainly are now.
At risk of being a bit of a contrarian, it didn't really do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping for more ceilings. I did not get more ceilings. I thought that it was a little bit unadorned for my taste. And yeah, maybe a little bit too stripped back, or maybe I just didn't give it enough time. Haven't listened to it enough. I don't know. Maybe there are multitudes that will unfold in front of me.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair. I did actually have that same thought or feeling when I listened to it, that the natural comparisons to Ceilings, I think, just based on the tempo and the vibe of it. And it isn't as good as Ceilings, I don't think. But yeah, I think it's still good, and I think it's still a nice teaser of what's to come. Is it April the album's out?
April 5th.
I'm making that up.
Yeah, if you read the Wheel Talk newsletter, I said April is going to be quite the month for the overly emotional.
Well, that's why I knew it was April, because I did read your great newsletter this week on escapecollective.com.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I think Jacob Collier's got a new album coming out in a few weeks, actually. Just completely unrelated, but...
exciting.
That's exciting, too.
Very exciting. Yeah. Yeah, this... I really, really like the Lizzie McAlpine song. Like, I don't love it as much as the album that we did, 5 Seconds Flat. Like, I feel like I'm still just really excited for the album that she's going to release. And if this is a hint of what is that album is going to be, then I cannot wait to hear the rest of it. But this song had me, like, I put it on when I realized that the song was out. We were just sitting down to dinner, and so I just put it on while we were all, like, getting ready to eat. And then I just was, like, sitting at the dinner table while Tom's and Lila ate, just, like, head on the table, just sobbing, whilst they just, like, went about their dinner. So it hit me right in the feels.
Did they react to this, or are they just like, oh, that's just Abby?
They're used to it, yeah.
Just weeping into your burrito bowl.
For anyone playing along at home, I was just going to say that the Jacob Collier album, for those that are interested, is out February 29, so just over a week from the time of recording, so less than a week by the time you hear this. Other new stuff that I was listening to, Little Sims' new EP, I think you shared that for us as well, Abby. It's called Drop 7. Keen for your thoughts on it, Abby. I didn't really enjoy it, if I'm honest. I really liked her album that we reviewed in the early days of the podcast, but this felt a bit meh to me, to be honest. It felt more experimental, and yeah, I admire her trying different stuff, but this just felt a bit all over the place for me. It didn't really grab me in the same way. But how did you find it, given you're a bigger fan of Little Sims and you've liked more of her stuff?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I liked it in a sense that I like what she does all around. Like, everything that she does with music is really cool. So I enjoyed listening to it, but after I listened to it once, I didn't really feel the pull to listen to it again. And I definitely prefer her, like, studio albums. The one that we did, Sometimes It Might Be Introvert, and then the one that she released after that one also, like, those two albums are just so good. And there's a danger in comparing this to those, because the drops that she does are a lot more experimental. I think it's a way of her, it's an outlet for her to do something new with music and still be able to put it out into the world without having it be tied to a big studio release. And I think that's really cool. I love that she can do that as an artist. But I think, like, in terms of daily listening, like, it's not something that I saved to my library to listen to again. I listened to it and I was like, sweet. And then kind of did other things.
No, I agree. Great that she did it. Great that she's got an outlet for it. Great that it's out there and people can listen to it. And the other thing I wanted to mention, finally, of things I've been listening to is a bit of a throwback. The American rapper Lil Dicky. I don't know if you guys know him at all, but I really, really like his stuff. I found myself going back and listening to his 2015 album, Professional Rapper. And for those that aren't familiar, he's kind of... he's very much a rapper in his own right, but it's kind of comedy rap, but not in the same way that, like, Flight of the Conchords does comedy rap. It's more like the stuff he raps about is just kind of funny, and he just has a different take on it. And the album's really good, and the opening track is with Snoop Dogg, and it's all about him auditioning to become a professional rapper. And it's all very self-aware and funny, and I can understand why people wouldn't like what he does, but I think it's quite fun, and I had fun kind of diving back into that world. It sounds like you're not as much of a fan, Abby, based on that reaction.
Yeah, just bad associations with boys who, yeah, think that he's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I respect your judgment, Matt.
Well, we already knew I wasn't cool, so I don't have anything to lose there. So let's change the subject. Ian.
You're way cooler than you think you are.
Sounds like you're cooler than Little Dicky. I've been trying to listen to three albums for this damn podcast. which has gone less well than I would have hoped, to be honest. Just for a bit of real talk for the listeners.
That's a lot.
But amongst that, it is a lot. Amongst that, I've been enjoying listening to an album that Spotify just served up a track, and I was like, oh, that sounds like something I would like. So I listened to the album Bronze Mystic by a band called Gallops from the UK, which is self-described as featuring moments of soaring post-rock, humming dark ambience and industrial-tinged noise, constantly underpinned by the propulsive charge of force-to-the-floor electronic music. So that's...
it's a lot.
I really like this album.
It sounds like a headache.
It's a little bit headachey, but it's also...
migraine-inducing.
What's that? Is it Rat-a-Tat? Are they a band?
Oh, Rat-a-Tat, yeah.
Have I spoken about them before?
Yes.
It reminds
Kaylee
me of them.
Kaylee introduced them to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In Clermont-Ferrand.
yeah, great place.
A wonderful place. One of the best best places in France that I've encountered, which probably is doing a grave injustice to most of France. Anyway, it reminds me a little bit of Rat-a-Tat, but a little bit more loud and a little bit more freaky. So I would recommend that album, Bronze Mystic, if you like the sound of any of those things, which sounds like Abby may not.
I do like Rat-a-Tat, besides that, to be fair.
Oh, you do? Okay. Listening to Alt-J for this podcast also put me onto a Wild Beasts tangent. They were a British four-piece who did this weird sort of sensual post-punk kind of stuff crossed with art pop with all sorts of weird... they had two vocalists and one of them had this really deep melodic voice and the other one was quite flamboyant and... quite high-pitched, and they are friends if you are aware of this podcast through cycling. They are friends of Dave Everett, Shoddy, and from the same town. So if you can picture like the arty people from that kind of part of England with their weird sort of sexy art rock band, but they're great. They were really, really good, and I saw them once or twice and really loved their stuff. So I was listening to their sort of career spanning end of, you know, after they hung up their guitars and microphones for the last time, their career spanning album last night, All My Dreams Came True. And what got me onto that, besides Alt-J, was that one of the songs got stuck in my head. I was having a shower this morning. My youngest daughter, who is 3, likes just wandering into the shower when I'm in the shower, which is cool, and just jumping in the shower with me. So I was like whistling part of the song. And she's like, "Dad, what's that?" And I was like, "It's this." And then there's like these, it's quite sort of Tom heavy stuff. So during breakfast, we were listening to it and she was doing like a little shoulder wiggle along to the music. And I think I can say that she likes Wild Beasts as well. So yeah, that's me.
I miss Shoddy. He's yeah, just me a too. Delightful human being.
He is.
I wonder how he's doing. You guys talk to him ever?
It's been too long.
You know, my mom, who listens to this podcast and
hello.
Also other podcasts that I've been on in the past, she loves Shoddy. Anyway, do you guys know that MGMT released a song like 2 days ago? You guys remember
MGMT? That is
MGMT?
A band that I have not thought of them for probably a decade.
I know. They're releasing a new album soon. And they released a song a couple days ago. And I was watching the music video yesterday, which just led me down the rabbit hole of Electric Feel, which is a banger. Such a good song.
When did that come out? What is that, like 2009 or something? Holy 2007, shit.
2007, but I feel like it was discovered in 2009 because, you know, when you hear, sometimes you hear music and you can like physically, you can imagine yourself being exactly where you were when you used to listen to that music. And when I listen to Electric Feel, I can even picture the shoes that I would wear as I walked myself to class freshman year of college at the University of Vermont. Like the image in my head, I can picture myself at the age of 19, 18, 18-year-old Abby, 17-year-old Abby, just walking to school.
What shoes?
They were like teal. They had like teal highlights, but then like pebbled gray above the teal and then white on the top, and they look like Nikes, but they're a Nike ripoff brand that I feel like the brand started with a C, and they were supposed to be these like, they were skate shoes, but they were supposed to be like some fancier eco version of a Nike, and they don't exist anymore,
but they live on.
They're high tops
every time that Electric Feel plays.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a great song. Who wants to start?
I can start. I was thinking that maybe it makes sense to do this chronologically, and I have the album that was released first in 2012. Does that work for you guys? So the album that I decided to take for this one, Alt-J's An Awesome Wave from 2012, was recommended to us by Brooke Lenvay, who we'll hear from in a second. But I thought I'd just give a quick introduction on Alt-J for those that aren't familiar. They're a British indie rock band that first started in 2007, basically a three-piece. Drummer Tom Sonny Green, lead vocalist and guitarist / bassist Joe Newman, and keys and backing vocalist Augustus Unger Hamilton, which is a fantastic name. And the name is a reference to the name of the band, Alt-J, is a reference to the combination of keys you can press on a Mac computer to make a triangle symbol. And the band have talked about how they're obsessed with the triangle shapes, and it's actually the capital Greek letter for delta. An Awesome Wave is their debut album from 2012. They've got 4 albums at this point. But that first album won a handful of awards at the time, including the Mercury Prize for the best album by a musical act from the UK or Ireland in 2012. When it first came out, it was, I'd say, reasonably well received by critics. It's got a 71% rating on the ratings aggregator site Metacritic. In the indie music scene, I think it's fair to say it made quite a splash, and songs like Breeze Blocks and Tessellate became, I'd say, well known amongst those who listen to indie rock. And I think people that even wouldn't be familiar with the band probably had heard those songs for a lot of people. But before we go any further, I think maybe we just listen to what Brooke had to say about why she chose this album for us.
Hi, Matt. And also, hi, Abby and Ian. Thanks heaps for picking Alt-J as the album, or An Awesome Wave as the album that you'll be reviewing. I can't wait to hear what you think about it. The reason I picked this is actually, obviously, I love the album. It's a real favourite of mine. I go back to it all of the time. It also came up in one of the podcasts, and I think Abby might have mentioned that she'd not heard of Alt-J before. So when you put the shout out for recommendations, I thought that would be a good one, given it's such a good album, and I'd love to hear Abby's thoughts on it. So can't wait to hear the episode. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Brooke. I was really happy to listen to this one again. I'd heard a little bit of Alt-J in the past, and they were a band that was on a long list of mine of artists that I wanted to listen to more but just haven't gotten around to. So having the reason to listen to this was really nice. I'd heard a few songs of theirs before, and I maybe had heard this album once, but I'm not entirely sure. But I had a really good time with it. I really like the tone of it overall. It's got a moody, introspective, contemplative feel. But there's this really nice sense of melody as well that underpins it all. I like the way that the drums are front and center throughout and play a crucial role in not just keeping the rhythm, obviously, but I guess giving little flourishes that really highlight what the band's doing. And I think that's a really crucial ingredient of the album and Alt-J sound in general. When I think of Alt-J, one of the things that sticks out to me is the vocal delivery. And I think for a lot of people, their vocal style can be a bit polarizing. I think you could say it's playful and irreverent and whimsical and maybe a bit weird as well. I think it works. I think it's different, and it's unusual in a way that really catches the ear for me, but I can certainly understand why people wouldn't like it. It feels a bit affected, a bit contrived perhaps, and I know, Ian, that's an issue that you've spoken about in the past, so I'm keen to hear your thoughts on that particularly. There's three short interludes on this album, which we've talked about in the past, how sometimes they're not our favourite parts of albums, but I actually really enjoyed them here. They're just minute-long sketches, quite simple, that really, nice little moments throughout that break up the album, and I enjoyed those, and I enjoyed this as a whole, and we can talk about favourite tracks in a minute, but I think overall I really enjoyed this, and I was happy to come back to it, and really glad that Brooke put it in front of us.
I think it's an interesting point you make about the vocals, because they are definitely, they are what they are. And I hadn't listened to Alt-J all that much. So Breeze Blocks was a big song when this album came out. That was kind of fairly present in the sort of music listener bubble, if I can put it that way. And I didn't mind it, but it didn't really inspire me to check out more at the time. So this was the first time for this podcast that I was actually listening to the album as a whole. And I liked it more than I thought I would based on that song. I can see why it's a single, because it's probably the most sort of direct and immediately catchy. But I think that it's stronger the further it gets away from those kind of instincts, for me at least, and explores those tones outside of like a poppy melody. I think that the way that they build the sound is really interesting. I like the use of synths, and I like the inventive way that the percussion is used. An interesting point that I found out about the percussion is that the drummer has Alport syndrome, which causes, I think, like 80% hearing loss for him. So he's almost deaf and uses different techniques to be able to play the music. So I think that's really interesting. I'm not sure if that's degenerative or whether it has sort of constantly been at that level, but there was at least one article that I was reading about their most recent album where that was something that he was dealing with. So I think that in that context, the drumming's even more interesting. The lyrics are kind of abstract to me. Maybe I just need to spend more time with it. But it's kind of like this hazy kind of abstract album at this point for me. And I enjoyed it, and I'll probably listen to it more. But it really made me want to listen to Wild Beasts, which is what I ended up doing more of.
How did you find it, Abby?
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to disappoint Brooke, because I think that for me, like the I couldn't get over the vocals were just not for me. So I felt like listening to it, I was struggling to get into it, because partially because when you have three albums, it's hard not to kind of pick and choose your favorite to listen to more. And this one definitely was solidly at the bottom of the pile for me. So I already just had less time with it than had it been like a sole pick. And maybe I would have liked it more if I'd listened to it a bit more, but I found that I was like really having to force myself to get through it. And I think a lot of that is because of the vocals, but also because it just feels like there's a lot going on. And when I was reading about them, the making of the album, it said that they took 5 years to make it. And I feel like the more time they sat with it, the more like convoluted it got. Like if they'd maybe just stopped after like 2 years, perhaps I would have enjoyed that. I would have found more enjoyment from listening to the album. But I felt like there was just like too much going on to really take it in. And I don't think that that means that I won't listen to it in the future. Like, I think I definitely will. Because it's something that I feel like I need to just sit with more to enjoy. But at the same time, like, I was talking to one of my friends the other day about a book series. And I was like, but you just have to get through the first two books and then it's good. And she was like, but if it's a 6-book series and I have to get through the first two books till it gets good, I'm not going to read it. And I feel like that a little bit with this album, that like if I need to sit with it for more time in order to enjoy it, then it's not something that I think that I will have the patience for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's totally understandable.
Like, I didn't dislike it at all.
Yeah, I think the vocals particularly very understandable that you wouldn't enjoy that. I think anytime you're recording something that's that unusual, or you're making a creative choice that's that bold, I guess you'd say, there's going to be people that don't like it, and you take that calculated risk as an artist. And yeah, that's just what it is, I guess. Did you guys have songs that stood out particular to you that you quite liked?
I liked Tessellate. There was another one towards the end of the album, which I did not note.
What could it be?
But there was that one. What could it be? Let's say it is Fitz Pleasure, just choosing a song at random.
Yeah, that's the one with the heavy synth bass line.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And Breeze Blocks, like, I feel like that one is maybe the strongest for me.
Breeze Blocks is good. Tessellate's good. I quite like the intro as well. I feel like that sets the tone really nicely.
Yeah, I like that too.
It sets the tone in terms of the kind of sludgy, laconic vocal. That's how I described it in my notes. But also that hi-hat pattern on the drums that's so common throughout. And just texturally as well, I think it does a really nice job of letting the listener know what they're in for the next 40 minutes or whatever. Yeah, Fitz Pleasure is really good. The heavy section of that is really nice. And Matilda is quite beautiful too, I think.
I can't listen to Matilda and not think of Matilda, the Harry Styles song that is really good. So yeah, I'm definitely going to listen to it again. Like, it's not something that I've completely written off. And I feel like I hear Alt J mentioned enough in my inner circle of people that isn't you two that I need to give them more of a chance.
Just be you, Abby. You don't need to be anyone else to be cool.
as like last time, we're not going to rate these.
I think that's a good call. Just for the fact that, you know, we didn't get to listen to these as much either. Like, Ian, you mentioned that, and I certainly didn't listen to any of these three albums as much as I normally would. So I think, you know, these are more of an initial listen, I think. And yeah, rating them maybe doesn't make as much sense there.
I feel like the best part about having the listener picks is that we get like a sense of what our listeners listen to. If, I mean, assuming that they're listening to the things that we recommend and like the albums we pick, we also get to listen to something that they would have picked or if they'd been on the podcast. Or, and also like a lot of the times I feel like the lists that come in are bands that I've never heard of, which is really cool.
I was very happily surprised by the 40 something albums that were put forward. There were many, many albums on that list that I would very happily listen to. And all three of these ones are ones that I would be happy to listen to. So
yeah,
I think compared to last time we did this, where there were a couple which felt maybe more like a slog, or at least I feel like any of these three, I was challenged enough because they weren't necessarily something that would be in my normal listening, but they were never unpleasant and they were always something that I was happy to listen to. So that was really nice. And agreed. I could say the same of, you know, 15 or 20 other albums on that list.
All right, my turn. My album that I got to look into was Japanese Breakfast Jubilee. And I was excited about this one because I've heard of Japanese Breakfast, but I've never listened to them. And I've always kind of been meaning, they've been like on my list to listen to, and I've been meaning to check them out for a long time. So I was excited to finally have an excuse. Japanese Breakfast is an indie pop band formed by the frontwoman Michelle Zauner. I'm so sorry if I'm saying that wrong. She formed the band as a side project to one of her other bands, an emo band called Little Big League, and the two are just insanely different. So it's pretty cool, her range, actually, with the different projects that she's a part of. She named the band Japanese Breakfast after she saw a GIF of Japanese Breakfast and thought that that would sound exotic as a band name and would also make people question what exactly is a Japanese breakfast, which it works. I don't know what they eat for breakfast, but now I want to know. The first album that she released was after a period of grief. She wrote a bunch of songs while she was helping care for her mom. And so the sound from that until this one has changed slightly, but it did kind of, the forming of the band was formed in grief. The album that we had for this episode, Jubilee, is the third studio album from the band, and after this came out they kind of were on the map a little bit. They were nominated for Best Alternative Album with Jubilee and at the Grammys, and also nominated for Best New Artist the same year, which they lost to Olivia Rodrigo. Would be hard to go up against her in the Best New Artist category after she released Driver's License, to be fair. The first single for Jubilee was released in March of 2021, and then two singles followed that one before the eventual album release on June 4th.
Do we want to hear from Joshua, who recommended the album for us?
Hello, my name is Joshua. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, USA, and the album I chose is Jubilee by Japanese Breakfast. I chose this album because it's an ambitious indie pop album, and it packs in a lot of musical ideas. So I think that's going to give you all a lot to discuss. Selfishly, I also chose it because it's a joyful album, and it reminds me of one of the most joyful times in my life. And so anytime I listen to this album or read about it or hear other folks talking about it, it takes me back to that time and place. So I look forward to hearing what you all have to say about it. Love the podcast, and thank you so much for including this.
I love that. I love that about music. Like, that is so one of good. My favorite things about music, that you can listen to it and it just like transports you to another time. Every time I listen to Folklore, I am in the forest in Latvia, like every single time. Anyway, yeah, I love that. Thank you, Joshua. I mean, for such a short album, to be fair, like 37 minutes, 10 songs, and it does pack a lot in there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I hadn't heard of these guys at all, and I was really excited to check them out because this is the only one of the three in this episode that I hadn't heard of. So it came to a completely fresh, and it was probably the album of the three that I liked the least to start with, but it really grew on me. And I think it's one that would grow on me more if I listened to it more than the few times that I did for this. I described in my notes the general vibe of this as being kind of wistful or aloof. And the metaphor that it kept coming to mind was this being the musical equivalent of sticking your fingers in your ears and closing your eyes to block out the world around you and just living in your own head for 40 minutes, or living in this world, this carefree escape from reality for 40 minutes. It's just kind of got this almost ethereal, dreamlike feel to it to me, and feels, yeah, very wistful is the word that I kept coming back to throughout. And I really enjoyed that. I think you're right, Abby. It does feel like dinner party music. It kind of transports you to a different place and a different feeling entirely. And musically, there's some really interesting stuff here. I like the horns, in particular on the opening track, Paprika. The instrumentation there is really nice. I like that some of the songs are kind of heavier and more driving, and others are much lighter and more ethereal, like I mentioned before. There's some nice strings, particularly on the intro to Tactics. There are some moments that are kind of a bit meh to me throughout, but I think the album starts really strongly and it finishes really strongly. And I think Posing for Cars, the final track, is pretty incredible. It starts off quite unassuming with just vocals and guitar, and then builds with strings and drums coming in and heavier guitar, and then just gets better and better as it goes along, and it's a really solid closer. And yeah, like I said, this really grew on me each time that I listened to it, and I'm excited to go back to this and listen to more of their stuff, because I feel like it's one of those albums that really rewards repeat listens, because there's a lot going on, as we've said, and lots to unpack as you go through.
It's really interesting to listen to this album and listen to the first two albums that they made, because like that Joshua mentioned, that this is an album that has a lot of happy feelings tied to it for him. The first two albums are really sad. So this is, yeah, comparing the three is really interesting. But I mean, like, yeah, I feel like Paprika to start it off is an interesting one. And her vocals in the beginning of it also are very different, I feel like, than anything that I've like have on my regular rotation. But I agree, Matt, like it's something that I think I'm going to continue listening to.
I liked this one, and I knew a song or two off it beforehand. It's not something that I've listened to a lot, but I certainly knew Be Sweet, which initially I came across because I was really excited that it was going to be an Afghan Weeks cover, because they have a song called Be Sweet, but it's not. It is Japanese Breakfast's Be Sweet. But that is also a really good song, so I liked that. There are a few bands that kind of fill a similar space for me to Japanese Breakfast. So it reminds me of The Weather Report, who I think also do similar kind of things with their synths and occasional use of saxophones and things like that, and kind of a little bit of an 80s, 90s throwback. Cassandra Jenkins, her vocals remind me of Mitski, if you've heard Mitski, and also the vocals from a band called Asobi Seksu. And I think that all of those bands are things that I like and enjoy listening to and find very pleasant to put on, but also struggle to emotionally connect to, with the exception of Cassandra Jenkins. I've listened to that album a lot, but I think that they feel kind of interchangeable to me, and it's never, ever unpleasant to listen to. Always really love listening to it, but it doesn't pull me in with any particular thing that differentiates one of those artists from the next artist. It's almost like this is a kind of musical shape or musical texture that they're all playing in, and my ears aren't equipped to, or I don't have the bandwidth or the time to, or the interest, I don't know, to delve into it enough to work out the nuance in the sound between each of those. Just a sort of general appreciation. So I really like Be Sweet. I like Posing for Cars. Don't really like Savage Good Boy. There's songs that I like, songs that I don't like so much, but the overall vibe that I get is it's a very warm sound. It's very inviting. It's something that I want to sort of sink into, but doesn't necessarily stick around beyond that point for me.
You didn't like the maybe I need to listen more. You didn't like the Queen inspired solo on Savage Good Boy, Ian? Straight out of the Brian May textbook, that one.
I didn't like the opener to it, and I don't think that I was inspired to stick around much beyond it.
I mean, I totally get it. I feel like I agree with everything you just said, but I also could put on this album and just like curl up in bed and be totally happy to listen to it.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I would feel the same way. And if I was out for a night bike ride and the sun was setting and there was like golden light and a bit of dust kicking up off the gravel and that kind of thing, that would be a perfectly lovely way to spend 37 minutes and 3 seconds for me.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Ian. And I think that really, for me, it comes back to what Joshua was saying. I could really imagine that if this album took you back to a time and a place and particular memories, the mood of this would really heighten those positive feelings, I think. It feels like a real album that would be very evocative in that way because it is so warm and inviting, like you said, and does have that wistful vibe to it. So, yeah, I can really see why Joshua likes it, and I can only imagine what it's like for him putting this back on and being taken back to those happy memories. I think that'd be very powerful.
My turn? Abigail is listening.
I was trying to remember Tactics. Like, Tactics really reminded me of something. I had a really funny reference that I thought of when I was listening to Tactics, and now I can't remember what it was. So I was trying to re-listen to the chorus where she really like goes like this with the vocals, but I cannot remember what the reference that I had thought of was. But I think it was like, I feel like it reminds me of a musical, some musical that I've seen, and if I could remember what it was, you would laugh, but I cannot remember.
I know what you mean, though. It does have that kind of lilting melody where, yeah, it's very light and ethereal and a kind of, you feel like you're floating almost, I feel like. Yeah, it feels musical.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think the only song that I didn't like was Savage Good Boy. Maybe Slide Tackle as well. It was one that I was like, meh. But overall, I feel like I really enjoyed. But I'm so excited to talk about Camp Cope.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll listen again.
Okay, Camp Cope. Do we have a voice note from Andy Gary?
Andy tells us he's sending one. So by the time you are all listening to this, it'll be have arrived and you'll be able to hear Andy now, I guess. Or not.
Hey, Album Files. It's Andy here. I chose Camp Cope's How to Socialize and Make Friends. It's a record that both captures and confronts what the band and society were going through at the time. It's really unvarnished and direct in the way that it deals with vulnerability, but I think it does so from a place of fearlessness, and that really gives it strength that makes it cathartic. It's not an album that you would put on in the background. It really demands that you listen to it and think about what the band are trying to convey, and that's what keeps drawing me back to it. I hope it connects with you too. Cheers.
What I like about Andy's voice note there is his full and rich Scottish accent, I imagine. I'm pretty sure I got that right. And
yeah,
from what I am aware of Andy Gary, or Jerry, as the case may be, we don't know. Maybe he'll tell us. Maybe he already has. Is that... Yeah, I like his vibe. I'm an Andy fan. So anyway,
he was taking photos at the Worlds in Glasgow, and he sent me some awesome photos of Toms.
Yeah, okay, so I was right with the accent.
Yeah.
Unless he moved there. And he could have just like this thick Bronx accent, and he just moved to Scotland for love or something in his 30s. Who knows?
Got a southern accent.
Yeah, we could be talking about his Scottish accent, bigging him up for that. And he could be all, hey, I'm walking here. We don't know.
Okay, let's remain on track.
I'm trying to remain on track, but my cat's walked in. I thought the door was closed, and she's just wandering around making little noises.
Is this Sparrow?
Sparrow. We have a cat called Sparrow. She's stripy. And she's
new, isn't she?
Somewhere high. Sorry?
Is she new?
She is. Okay, she's walked out. I'm just going to go and close the door, and then I'll tell you about her newness or other. Sparrow is a rescue cat that we got a year ago.
Didn't you get another cat like really recently though?
No, I might just been bragging about Sparrow.
Okay, fair enough.
After the fact. Anyways, a rescue cat was found wandering a...
No, don't say anyway rescue cat. Say anyway Camp Cope.
Anyway, you don't want to hear about Sparrow? I just have more material to talk about with the cat than I do Camp Cope. Just spinning this out. Camp Cope.
Sorry, Andy.
I'm sorry he's like this. Camp Cope were a three-piece band from Melbourne from 2015 to 2023. They broke up last year.
They broke up last year? Fuck,
that sucks. They broke up last year.
That sucks.
I'm sorry, Abby. Three-piece band, the lead front person was Georgia Mac McDonald on guitar and vocals, then Kelly Dawn Kelso Helmrich on bass, and Sarah Tomo Thompson on drums. As you're probably detecting, they have the Australian habit of nicknaming themselves after their surnames with an O on the end, or their first names with an O on the end. Tomo, Kelso, and Mac, that one breaks the cycle. So they're kind of like a scrappy emo punk, were a scrappy emo punk indie kind of band with pretty stripped back sound, at least for this album. This is their second album, How to Socialize and Make Friends, that Andy's chosen for us, which came out in 2018. It's a pretty breezy runtime of 9 songs, 38 minutes. And peaked at number 6 on the ARIA charts, which is the Australian Recording Industry Association. And that is what we in Australia think of as like the Grammys. There are the ARIA Awards, and they're these big spiky triangles of metal that you can impale people on. They're the trophies. Anyway, so they got 6 on the ARIA charts. They were very sort of... quite a DIY aesthetic, quite stripped back. They were very outspoken and vocal and proudly feminist. They were outspoken against sexual harassment at gigs. They would regularly call out gender inequality. They were kind of activists for female music and had quite an influential place in Australian musical history as a result. They had a big kind of spat with, I think it was Falls Festival, when they were shunted off to this small stage at Falls Festival, which is this big Australian music festival, and made noises about the fact that they'd just played Sydney Opera House a couple of weeks earlier, and then they were on this shitty stage at Falls Festival, and felt that that was because they were women, and were probably right. So when they broke up, Georgia Mac gave a kind of speech at a music conference in Sydney, where she talked about how the band strived to show young girls and queer people that they have a place on the stage, that their voices matter, and their music can have an impact. She went on to say, "We are still one of the only internationally renowned and critically acclaimed bands of all women to come out of Australia, and we did it all ourselves. with no external management, no showcases, and no major labels. When they were in Australia, they were they sort of broke through the Triple J, which is the Australian youth radio station thing, through Triple J Unearthed, which was the an avenue for young bands to get noticed, and then got major airplay. Did a bit of touring in the US and sort of found a second home in Philadelphia with a bunch of bands from there and some fairly high profile support acts in Australia as well. This album is regarded as kind of their breakthrough and their probably their best known album, largely because of the first single and the first song on the album, The Opener, which is quite explicitly about inequality in the music industry. It's got lyrics like, it's another man telling us we can't fill up the room. It's another man telling us to book a smaller venue. And I think that the performance of it is really obviously impassioned. And Georgia Mack has this incredibly expressive vocal. It's not not anything that you would call polished, but it's very earnest, very heartfelt, very honest, I think. And the lyrics reflect that as well. It's there's no punches pulled. It's just very, very direct and very impassioned. The second song on the album, How to Socialize and Make Friends, which is also the title track, is a really, I think, the first song that I heard by them, just listening to Triple J in the car or whatever, and is one of my favorites on the album. I think the album dips a little bit in the middle. There's a couple of songs that are a bit samey. Anna and Sagan Indiana are a little bit samey to me, but I think it comes really good at the end. UFO Lighter, which is the penultimate track, is really strong. And the last song, I've Got You, which is the most stripped back and kind of contemplative song on the album, is a kind of reflection on Georgia Mack's relationship with her father in his sickness. From what you can sort of pick out between the lines, he's got cancer or is dying or has maybe died. And that's a really beautiful, and when it comes on, you're just sort of hanging on every word. It's really emotionally affecting. They describe themselves as scrappy feral idiots, the three women in the band. They've got this kind of rough punk sound. And although it's quite bare bones, they do a lot with the fact that it's just these three people. I particularly like the bass lines. They're really imaginative, melodic. There's a lot of, it's not just plodding along on a note beneath the guitar line. It's really ranging around, and I enjoy that. And I like the drumming as well. But I think the standout for me is George Mack's vocals. I don't normally go for a thick Australian accent in a vocal performance. I have a bit of cultural cringe when it comes to that kind of thing, and she has a pretty thick Australian accent, but I think it's really effective in this case. So yeah, I enjoyed listening to this. I wanted to come back and listen to it more. It's a little bit more punk than what I would normally listen to, I think, and a little bit more explicitly sort of activist in its mentality than what I would normally listen to as well, but I enjoyed it and was really happy to have an opportunity to listen to it.
That's a great summary. I have some things to say about this album. So this is one of the three that I was most familiar with, and I was quite familiar with Camp Cope and got onto them through Smith Street Band. And I guess for better or worse for me, this album is intertwined with the Smith Street Band and their 2017 album, More Scared of You Than You Are of Me, which I've talked about in past episodes, and it's one of my favorite albums of the last 10 years, I guess. The frontman from Smith Street Band, Will Wagner, was in a relationship with Georgia Mac just before this album came out. And so both this album and the Smith Street Band albums are, there are songs on both of them about each other, having their relationship kind of fell apart in a really nasty way. And in the years that followed, you know, abusive emails came out and were made public, and the relationship kind of, yeah, it was all played out very publicly in a really gross kind of way, which, you know, people can go and read up on that if they want to. I don't need to go into it in any more detail, but I bring that up only to say that this album has greater emotional heft than it might otherwise have, knowing that backstory. And there are definitely songs on here where Georgia was talking about Will and about how things fell apart and, you know, his less positive tendencies, and that, yeah, that makes this a powerful listen, I think. And the opener definitely has mentions of him in there, particular lines that are references to songs that he's written. So it's a tough listen, or yeah, a charged listen for me, I guess. But I think, Ian, you summed up really well. Her vocals are really the highlight here. Her passion and her ferocity, I guess, is really what binds it all together for me. And there's a power and a strength of conviction here that's pretty hard to ignore. I really liked this album when it came out, and I've really enjoyed listening to it the past couple weeks to be reminded of that. And I'm glad you singled out the bass, because I think that was something that a lot of people talked about with Camp Cope, was Kelly's bass playing and how it kind of did away with more of the traditional bass where you're, you know, underpinning the harmonic structure of the songs, and it's quite simple. She almost entirely played melodic lines to, yeah, and it was quite unusual and quite different. And I think it really works. I think it's a really nice signature element that the band had and gave them their sound. And I really like that. There are a few times where I don't think it works. I actually don't like UFO Lighter. I think the bass melodies there complicate things and get quite messy at times. But I think the rest of the time it's really interesting, and it, yeah, gives it a texture that you don't always hear, particularly when she's playing in the upper registers of the bass, which you don't often hear in this context. And I definitely hear what you're saying about some of the songs seeming samey in the middle there. There are a few moments where it felt like the same bass tones and melody ideas and the same guitar tones started to get a little bit samey. But again, I think Georgia Mac's vocal really does an important job of tying it together, and like I said, the passion that she sings with is hard to ignore, and yeah, this is a very strong album, and there's a lot to like about it. I think the opener is a great song. I really liked Anna, and The Omen I think is powerful as well. But yeah, I think you summed it up really well, Ian. This is a very strong album and a very powerful one for a lot of reasons.
I love this album so much. I feel like, I think I discovered Camp Cope when they released their, I guess, sadly, final album, Running with the Hurricane in 2022 is when I first heard of them. And then I went back, and of the two albums before, I listened to their debut self-titled Camp Cope album from 2016 the most. So this was the album of the three that I'd listened to the least before this. But I've listened to it once or twice before it was recommended, and I definitely like, I love this album. I listened to it so much over the last 2 weeks, and the opener and How to Socialize and Make Friends, The Omen, I feel like for me those are the strongest, and maybe I do agree with the sameness, but I feel like I liked the sound so much that I actually don't mind the sameness for an album that's only 38 minutes long. I was kind of like, I heard it, but it didn't bother me, and I didn't really think much of it until now, until you guys are mentioning it. And to that I say, sure, but it sounds good, so I'm fine with it. But I definitely agree that it is hard to it's hard to look past the vocals because they are so, she's so passionate when she's singing, but I just love it. I think it's, I just loved listening to it. I loved everything about it. I love the vibes. I love the message. And this is an album that will remain in my library for many, many years to come. And I will listen to it many, many, many more times.
Abby, if you haven't already, have listened to Georgia Mac's solo album, Pleaser. Okay. It's a bit different. It's more electronic and electronic drums and kind of dancier in parts. But if you like her vocal and her vibe, and I guess for you, Ian, as well, it's worth listening. Pleaser is the name of it, from 2019. And have a read about the album art that she chose for it. When you see the image, you'll know what I mean. But go and have a read up about how she chose that one. It's quite interesting.
They did actually a goodbye concert in Sydney, and there's a film of it, so I will definitely be watching that at some point. One of these on the trainer one of these days. That'll be my...
We had three pretty good albums, really, didn't we, in the end?
Yeah, we did. We really did. I feel like we got a really good variety of music to listen to without it being like overwhelmingly different from each other. Yeah, it was easy to switch between the albums. I think overall this experience with suggested albums was a better experience for me than the first. Not that those albums weren't good, but I think that this one just knocked it out of the park.
Thanks again to everyone that recommended albums. That was, as Ian talked about before, the fact that there were so many was awesome. And then, yeah, these are great suggestions.
All right, Ian, what's your suggestion? No pressure.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, I've been quiet the last few minutes because I suddenly remembered like 2 minutes ago that I was supposed to choose an album.
Did you not remember?
So completely forgotten. So I'm just just going to try and come up with this off the top of my dome. No, I do have a sort of long list in my head, but I would like to listen to something by Bon Iver, and I don't know which album to choose because I like the self-titled album better. That is my favorite Bon Iver album. But the one that I am feeling drawn to is Forever Ago. So we are going to do that.
That was fun.
That was more stress than I wanted at like 10:18 on a Wednesday night.
Watching your anguish play out in real time there was quite something.
Why did I not know? Why did I not remember? I'm going to regret that. Forever Ago.
Is this the one that I think
it is?
Is
there enough to say about that?
Yes, it is. Cool.
Oh,
I think there is.
Skinny Love? Great.
And the way it was recorded is interesting. Yeah, there's plenty to talk about here.
This has been great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, this is fun.
It's been a long one.